You're listening to Stateside. I'm April Baer. If you were with us yesterday at this time, we were speaking with historian and author Peter Cozens about his recent biography, Tecumseh and the Prophet, The Shawnee Brothers Who Defied a Nation. One of the intriguing aspects of Tecumseh's biography is a concept hatched during the War of 1812 that would have made Michigan a permanent homeland for people of many tribes. We wanted to run what we learned by Eric Hemingway. He's director of archives and records for the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians and a member of the Michigan Historical Commission. Eric, welcome back to Stateside.
Thank you for having me.
Do you remember the first time you heard the name Tecumseh? Maybe what context it was in, if it was in school or outside of that?
I heard it at home, and I was quite young at the time, and I grew up in an Odawa family, Odawa community, and hearing the name Tecumseh was through my mom, and it was in reverence. It was as a hero, as a person who was fighting for rights and for the people, and I didn't hear Tecumseh until much later. Again, outside of the home, until I started doing my own independent research and becoming a professional historian. I didn't hear about Tecumseh in any type of school setting. And that was disappointing, because hearing his name at home and what he stood for and what he was about, it kind of made me feel sad, you know, that such a person who had this type of stature and this type of impact, not just on Native communities, but on Michigan and on the United States overall, North America. So I first heard them around a kitchen table in my home.
Yeah. Where I'm from in Ohio, a lot of people know who Tecumseh is. But do you think, in your experience, is his name well known in Michigan, on tribal land or elsewhere?
So I think his name is well known, but the meaning gets lost. Mm. And this happens a lot with the appropriation of Native names. So we have another very famous individual who was, for lack of a better term, a freedom fighter, a resistance person, and this is Pontiac. So I argue that Pontiac is the most well-known Native in the United States, but probably the least understood. You know, we had a line of automobiles named after him. There is a town, there are townships. So there's a lot of different things named after this person that people recognize, but do they know who he is? Probably not. And Tecumseh falls into this realm. You know, there's many things named after the individual, but the story of the individual often gets lost in translation or doesn't get told at all.
In the early 1800s, as we discussed with Peter Cozens yesterday, Tecumseh and his brother Tenskwatawa, who was a prophet, worked to assemble a pan-Indian confederation. It was an alliance that had both political and spiritual underpinnings. And at its height, we're talking about several thousand people who followed them. The Confederacy's first goal was trying to protect tribal lands from white colonists. Peter told us that he felt like part of the success of this was possible because tribal relations between folks who were living in the Great Lakes area overall were pretty good. Do you agree with that assessment?
Well, that's a complicated answer. The relationships were always delicate. They're always in flux. And so when I say about that, tribes could be at war with each other, and then a few years later or a generation later, they would be in an alliance against a common enemy. And this happened quite a bit during the 18th and 19th century. And this common enemy was Europeans and later Americans. So yes, they would band together, but there was always certain tensions between certain tribes. And I wouldn't say that it was this overall cohesive alliance, because it wasn't. There was always these tensions. For example, the Odawa from Northern Michigan, they had heard about the prophet and they were very impressed with what he had to say. And they sent delegations down to hear him speak in Indiana. And once they were down there, they listened, they absorbed. And the chief of this Odawa delegation was called the Little King. And he had a pretty large following at the time. This was around 1809, 1810. And he was coming back from Prophetstown, and most of the people in his party died, probably from sickness. And they attributed it to something that the prophet had did to them. Mm. And they assembled a very large war party down by the Grand River, Grand Rapids, of Odawas, Ojibways. And they were going to go back and they were going to destroy Prophetstown themselves. And other individuals intervened and said, no, don't do this. So that's just an example of these tensions. Now, later on, due to his leadership qualities, Tecumseh was able to bring back the Northern Michigan Odawas into the alliance. But to say that there was, you know, this overall good feeling or friendship, that wasn't true.
So suffice to say, certainly some shared goals, but things could change quickly depending on conditions on the ground.
Perfectly said. I mean, things could change instantly.
Yeah.
With individuals, old grievances, old beefs. You know, these are people with major personalities, major egos. There's a lot of individuals who are, you know, these common goals, and they are moving together in this one direction, but that direction could change at any moment. And again, this is a testament to Tecumseh's leadership, where he is able to keep all of these things in check to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Now, mind you, each individual warrior is independent. They weren't under this allegiance to Tecumseh or even their own war chiefs. They went on their own accord, and they could leave the battlefield at any time. So when you had thousands of these warriors in the field together, that was really remarkable leadership.
I got a sense from the book that many of the warriors and families that took part in the Confederacy were from Michigan, though. Does that align with what you've heard?
Yeah, there was a huge number of individuals who were going to fight with, I call it the Alliance. They were from northern Michigan. They were from southern Michigan. There were Potawatomi. There was Odawas. There was Ojibways. Literally thousands of warriors from the Anishinaabek were aligning themselves with Tecumseh and going to fight. And these are also Odawas from, at the time, they were in northern Ohio that would later be removed after the war. So yeah, there was a large number of fighting men from Michigan and also from Canada in Ontario and Manitouan Island. So they have their own history of Odawa and Ojibwe warriors coming in and supplementing the force. And there's a large number of Ojibwes from Sault Ste. Marie under Jingwak Kuntz of the Little Pine Tree that went and fought at different battles. So yeah, Michigan definitely contributed.
Do we have any idea about their personal motivations? I mean, Tenskwatawa was pretty specific that he felt like some form of coexistence with Europeans was possible, but he was extremely suspicious about Americans and this new thing calling itself a country that seemed to be in the making. Do you know how widely or how completely those beliefs were shared?
Well, the prophet certainly had his influence before Tecumseh. And in my opinion, they would switch roles and prominence as time went on. And we have records and stories of delegates representing the prophet going far and wide throughout the Great Lakes, spreading the word. Some individuals and communities bought into what he had to say, and some thought it was simply hogwash, that it was ridiculous what he was proposing. He was self-serving, and they weren't going to abide by this. So it was all based on individual beliefs, whether they were going to follow him or not. And some did for a time. He had quite a bit of sway. But then the prophet was also very, very strict, for lack of a term, in his messages and delivery. There was what we call witch hunts with the Delaware, where they would seek out individuals from that tribe and execute them for what they believed was sorcery or witchcraft. So he took a very hard line in some cases with other tribes. He would intervene. And some other tribes didn't like how that was happening. They thought he was overstepping his boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
So it was all based on the individual and the community and how they viewed this person.
As the War of 1812 began, Tecumseh and his alliance came together with the British on the battlefield to fight the Americans. And if the British and the alliance had prevailed, the idea was to make Michigan a permanent, sovereign, non-negotiable nation state. We say nation state, but this, of course, would have involved people from many, many different tribes if it happened. Was that the first time that a sort of multi-tribal state came up in the Great Lakes region?
I would say no. I mean, this idea of rearranging Native populations happened immediately with the first European settlers, the Pilgrims, you know, of moving people out and to civilize them and to have them either become part of the fold or remove them or go to war. In doing so, there's this idea of like, what do we do with these Indians? You know, often called in history, the Indian problem. And many times it was you remove them and put them in certain areas. And this would go on for over a century, close to two centuries of removal. And then, you know, having this certain area become an Indian territory, and then, you know, settlers would come in and push them out, and they would create a new Indian territory. And finally, we have what we call Oklahoma and Kansas, will become the Indian territory. And there's over 40 tribes in Oklahoma, Kansas that are not originally from those states. They're removed tribes.
We might mention the Shawnee.
The Shawnee are there.
Yeah.
You know, Tecumseh's own people got removed in the very end. So this idea of, okay, if we put the Indians in this one spot, that problem will be solved. So it's gone on through different reiterations, and with the French and with the British and the Americans. And I'd also like to state that, you know, the War of 1812, in my mind, is a continuation of a resistance starting with Pontiac. You know, Pontiac had his war in 1763, but that's also part of the French and Indian War. And all these tribes were aligning with the French, or I should say the French were aligning with the tribes. The French couldn't do this on their own, and they needed the tribes to have this war with the British. So you have the French and Indian War, you have Pontiac's War, and then it goes into what we call Little Turtle's War down in Ohio Valley in 1790s. And this is just bleeding into the War of 1812. And the War of 1812 is really, in my mind, a continuation for the tribes of these prior wars against invasion of their lands. So Tecumseh has this history, this lineage within the Great Lakes of resistance. He's looking at what Little Turtle did. He's looking at what Pontiac did. And he's carrying the torch.
If you're just tuning in, I'm talking today with Eric Hemenway of the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians. And we're talking about the lives and legacy of the Shawnee chief Tecumseh and his brother, the prophet Tenskwatawa. Eric, what do you think it means that Tecumseh was willing to consider this, and not just consider it, but really propose it? I mean, he had to know how hard it would be to get people to live together, given what they had been through already.
Well, I try to put myself in that time and what was going on at this time period. And it is really unfathomable to think, you know, you have all these diseases going through, smallpox, measles, influenza, and they're literally killing thousands of people, entire villages. And then on top of this, you have people moving in and displacing you, and you're being displaced of your resources, food, water, your farms. And then on top of that, you have open hostilities from militia and settlers attacking your families. This is all going on in your lifetime. And you have to make a decision of what's going to be best for future generations. Even though there's going to be an immense amount of compromise in this, this is what you have to do. You have to have some territory and lands where you could feed your families and carry out your culture and your ceremonies. So if that means you're living in the shared territories, then so be it. Because what is the alternative? Destruction. And violence wasn't the first answer, but it was sometimes necessary to go to war. And that's what I think was going on at this time period, that they just had to, quote unquote, take up the hatchet to protect what they've had for thousands of years.
Yeah. In the world of what ifs, do you have any thoughts on how that might have played out if it had come to pass?
I used to. I mean, I would go over and over, like, what if Tecumseh won? He wasn't killed. The boundary at the Appalachians was, you know, reestablished, or at least at the Ohio River. You know, yeah, I've gone over a million times, April. And at some point, I just stopped thinking about the what ifs, because in my mind, it was just causing a lot of heartache. Because, mm-hmm. you know, post 1812, you've seen this great change occur with tribes. You know, there's more expansion, there's more hostilities against the Western tribes, there's forced assimilation with the tribes who were able to weather the storm east of the Mississippi. So I stopped thinking about the what-ifs and, like, thinking about what caused this and thinking about, you know, the future and trying to tell these stories of explaining what happened, because it's such an undertold story that happened here.
Right. There was one thing I wanted to ask you about Tenskwatawa, the prophet. I wanted to know what you make of the tenets of his spiritual revelation. You know, the way that it gets talked about in the accounts of the time in Peter Cousin's book is that he went into a trance-like state and came out. He made changes in his own life for sure, but he also started talking about the fact that people needed to hold on to their culture and remember their culture, and they needed to work together. spiritualism and prophecy were a big part of the ethos of the times in the 19th century. And I should say, not just in Native communities either. Do you take the stories about his revelation at face value, or more of just a statement of fact of something that he, you know, came to realize it was staring him right in the face?
You know, I don't have a clear-cut answer for this, April. You know, it's such a complicated time, such a dire time. These circumstances of invasion and disease and the world changing around you every single day. You know, I read the other biography of Tecumseh by John Sugden. And, you know, Tecumseh's life was hostility as a kid. You know, his village was overrun and his family was killed. That's his childhood. So you're growing up with that type of environment experience. I don't think it's out of hand to think of something like the prophet coming forward and saying, you know, this revelation has come to me. But on the other hand, I get a little bit leery. You know, I read about these individuals throughout history saying that they're the chosen one, you know, that the Great Spirit speaks through them and they are the one. So I'm just apprehensive as a person in that type of claim as an individual. But it worked. You know, I understand why this was happening given the time. Now, with the individual who is the prophet, he's a terribly complicated person. Did he have these revelations? I can't say for sure, yes or no. Maybe he did. But he also had these actions that were seen as detrimental, like these witch hunts, for lack of a better term. Or he wasn't going into battle with Tecumseh like the other warriors were. He would stay behind. So that, you know, there's a lot of moving parts to the individual. But at the end of the day, I see why both of them worked together and how they made it work.
Yeah. I think it's safe to say that ideas about pan-Indian identity and pan-Indian governance, for that matter, are viewed with some skepticism through the modern eye. I mean, people just, you know, they do have differences. And, you know, why should they necessarily align themselves with other folks, you know, just because of, you know, tribal culture? But I do wonder if the life and legacy of Tecumseh and what he and the prophet were talking about, do you think that that has had some influence in just how we talk about politics and organizing and movement today?
I can't see how it doesn't, you know, that this individual was working tirelessly to align these different independent sovereign nations, these multiple tribes, into a movement of resistance and to protect their rights and their resources. And what he did was on an international scale. You know, you had the British, you had the Americans, and you had all of these different tribal nations. And what happened and transpired with the War of 1812 changed the course of American and North American history. We may not realize it, but their influence is definitely felt, I feel, to this very day. And, you know, as a Anishinaabe person, you know, I look at this person who went above and beyond and set this example, but in the end, he was killed. And after he was killed, you know, things changed very quickly for tribes in the Great Lakes. I mean, within 15 years of the War of 1812's conclusion, removal was a federal policy, and they were removing tens of thousands of Indians to west of the Mississippi. Government wasn't going to deal with what they call quote unquote hostiles. They're going to move them out, or if you had resources. So there's a lot of negative impact from this as well for tribes.
How do you see him and his influences? Sorry, 3, 2, 1. How do you see Tecumseh and his influences, I guess, on how we live today?
Well, I would just like to state that he's a hero. I can't think of any other word. You know, I could say leader, I could say chief, but that doesn't, in my mind as an Anishinaabe person, do him justice. He's a true hero, and he backed up his talk with action. He was a very powerful orator. He could speak. He could work people. He could get them to come to the battlefield. But then he fought as well and bravely. So he wasn't just this talking piece. You know, he backed it up. So I think people just don't see Native heroes as much. You know, I was just going over some lesson plans for school, and we talk about founding fathers all the time. Jefferson, Washington, Franklin, Well, tribes have their own heroes and people who went above and beyond to look out for their best interests and to fight for their freedom and their rights. And Tecumseh is a perfect example of this. So maybe in recognizing Tecumseh, we'll start to recognize other Native heroes as well from the state of Michigan to start with. We had individuals from up here in Emmett County, Assiniboine, Muckaday Penasse, Apuxigon. I mean, men who were prominent leaders who helped shape the world that we are in today.
Eric Hemenway is director of archives and records for the Little Traverse Bay Bands of Odawa Indians. He's also a member of Michigan's Historical Commission. Eric, it's great talking to you. Thank you for making time for us.
Anytime, April. My pleasure.